This past weekend, Egypt marked the four-year anniversary of the revolution that ousted the longtime dictatorial presidency of Hosni Mubarak. On Saturday, an activist was marching in Cairo. He was shot dead. It's not clear who fired the shot, but other activists blame police. Yesterday, at least 18 people died in clashes with police. Dozens were injured, and more than 400 people were arrested. The violence and arrests represent more blows to the promise of democracy intended to spring from Cairo's Tahrir Square protests and the revolution of 2011. Journalist Thanasi Kanbanis covered the Arab Spring Revolution. He writes about what went wrong and right in his new book called Once Upon a Revolution, An Egyptian Story. He joins us now from NPR New York. Thanasi, welcome back.
Always great to be on your show.
Thanks. Nice to have you here. The headlines out of Cairo, though, over the weekend would lead us to believe that Egyptians are right now no better off than they were before the revolution. How do you characterize what's happening in Egypt right now, 4 years after the revolution?
Well, the obvious depressing storyline is that the old regime has come back stronger than ever before in an even more militarized guise. But the optimistic subplot here is that there's still dissent and there's still political protest happening despite every effort of the government to silence and crush people. And it's really important to realize four years and a day ago, since we're just past the anniversary, it was unthinkable that even one person would be willing to stand up in public, go on the radio, go on the in a newspaper, much less face off with the police or the army against the regime. And today, even after a year and a half of full-fledged total repression, there still are hundreds of people willing to do this. And that's something that marks a new era for Egypt and the Arab world.
Now, these are the people who caught your attention when you were at Tahrir Square, because you stayed there and met lots of people who you thought carried so much potential, unlike the accusations against some protests that seem to be hollow or at least have no stated goals. These are people who had plans, who had goals. Can you describe the two of them that you decided to profile in your book?
Well, one of them was a young Muslim brother named Muaz Abdul Karim. At the time of Tahrir, he had been for his entire teenage and adult life a sort of street organizer for the Muslim Brotherhood youth. He was very independent-minded, very critical and outspoken, and as a result, he was kicked out of the Brotherhood. He was in favor of a secular state, and he is still he's now in exile. But he spent the last 4 years agitating for a sort of a common revolutionary front against the old regime, where people would set aside their long-term differences, Islamists, secular people, leftists, rightists, and fight for just basic, you know, due process of law, fair elections, and these sort of essential ingredients of democracy. The other character I followed was a bourgeois 40-year-old architect named Bassem Kamel. He was someone I think a lot of your listeners can relate to, in that he was someone who just was trying to get a good deal for his three kids, stay out of politics, keep his head down, and at age 39, a year before the revolution, realized that he'd been sold a bill of goods, and that by being silent, he had sort of been complicit in the utter destruction of his country. And he became very committed to politics, but in a very reasonable and moderate way. He's someone who wants to bring incremental change about working within the system. He made it into parliament, even though that parliament didn't last very long. And today he's actually running a campaign for parliament again. The elections are in March.
So what do these two examples tell you then? Because on the one hand, I mean, there's somebody who's still active in politics. On the other hand, the first person you mentioned was criticized for being critical of the Muslim Brotherhood, which assumed power after Mubarak, and he's now in exile. I mean, are these good news stories or just realistic news stories?
Well, the headline is the old regime won. Power made its comeback. Things are ugly in Egypt. There's more than 40,000 people in prison today just for the crime of protesting without a permit. So it's obviously not a good news story for those of us who would like to see a freer, more accountable, less violent government in Egypt, or frankly, people who would like to see a fairer and more stable and democratic Arab world. But the good news here is that the genie can't be put back in the bottle. All these folks, all these forces are actually still today pushing for this kind of indigenous Arab idea of accountable democracy. And really, you know, for me, one of the inspiring things to see is, okay, that, you know, the regimes have murdered and killed and tortured and put people in prison and driven people in exile. And still, even in prison, these folks are trying to grapple with the big long-term questions. So not just articulating that they want the tyrants out, but what do they want to take the place of the tyrant? What kind of system do they want? What kind of Western institutions do they want to adopt and improve? What kind of Arab institutions do they want to keep and improve? And that is that's a long-term and really fascinating struggle. And I think it's probably a little bit like what it was like in the time of the Federalist Papers here in the States, when regular folks and intellectuals and political rabble-rousers were hammering out the blueprints of a long-term system of government.
During the time of the Federalist Papers here, though, in the United States, if you want to make that comparison, there were certain leaders who emerged, leaders who we now think of as patriots. I guess some of them were rebels, as you mentioned, as well. Why is it that we've had such a hard time finding leaders when there seem to be so many on their way up during the revolution of Tahrir Square? What has happened to them?
Well, there's at least two places where I put the blame. And the first is the military dictatorship for 60 years has very effectively sold the idea that trying to be a leader, trying to be a politician is inherently selfish. And that has been internalized by dissidents and opponents who will criticize the government, but in the same breath say, far be it from me to seek power for myself or be playing politics. Now, the flip side is that the political class, the class of dissenters, suffers from a real poverty of ideas and charisma and leadership. I mean, at the end of it, there are a few dozen figures who to this day command a certain following, whether through their writings or through their street work, or even in prison today through their talking and dialogue with other prisoners. It's a very small number of folks, and these are the ones who are unafraid to say, yes, I am trying to be a leader, and you don't have to follow me, but there's no shame in trying to lead. And that is, in my view, the first thing that has to get resolved for there to be a long-term change in fortunes there, because the revolutionary movement was fragmented, was weak, in some ways very uncreative when it came to coming up with long-term political ideas, and that is still a problem for it today.
Okay, and very briefly, the United States is still very much involved in what's happening in Egypt. There is still an enormous amount of military aid that's going and foreign aid that's going to Egypt. The U.S. right now, where does Egypt stand in the U.S.'s view?
I think the U.S. has made clear that its priority is to keep counterterrorism cooperation flourishing with Egypt, and that all other considerations will be secondary. And the problem for the U.S. is that it has sold out any pretense of supporting real political change or democracy, and at the same time, it's managed to alienate the army as well. So it's angered the authoritarians and the Democrats.
You're saying this is all in service of trying to curb terrorism?
Right. And frankly, by not having a long-term strategy in the Arab world itself, the U.S. has ended up sidelining itself.
Okay. Good to talk to you. Lots more to talk about, but thank you for what we have right now. Thanasis Kambanis, his new book is Once Upon a Revolution, an Egyptian Story. We have an excerpt, in fact, at hereandnow.org. Thanasi, thank you very much.
Great to be with you.